Hello, everyone. Welcome back to episode 5 of our so-called hockey podcast here. I'm Dave Walker here with the rest of our hockey managers, Dean Wilson, Vince Vias, and John Mainberger. And today we have a very special guest from USA Hockey. We have our technical director, Ken Martell, who's born in California, played some youth hockey in California before he went on to Lake Superior State to play college hockey. And upon his college hockey, he stepped into some coaching roles with our USA National Development Program, actually won a gold medal with their U18 program. He's also part of coaching staff with St. Cloud State, Air Force, and Michigan Tech. Please welcome to our podcast, episode 5, Ken Martell.
Woo!
Yeah, Kenny.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for coming.
Good beer.
Yeah. So Ken, first thing, obviously born and raised here in Southern California.
I didn't know that.
I got a lot of cool little tidbits as kind of doing some background checking on you and just getting some information. And, I know you actually coached a good friend of mine, Jimmy Roy, at Michigan Tech. At Michigan Tech. So it's funny how the hockey world, it's a big world, but a very small world really think about it. So how did you get from, was it Hacienda Heights you were born in?
I was born in Whittier, but lived in Hacienda Heights growing up. I actually lived when I was really, really young. When I first started playing hockey, I lived in Norwalk. And my dad was the director of finance for the city there. And so when they found out that there was ice hockey at a local ice rink in Norwalk, my dad took me over and kind of got me going. So
I spent my time over there as well.
Yeah. So I know the rink's not there anymore, but that's where I played basically through about Bantam hockey. And then our team kind of disbanded a little bit. It's actually interesting because we had, you know, things happen in the hockey world where kids sort, the better players kind of start to want to play with each other and they congregate together. And at Bantam, we got tired of being good and winning. And the kids actually came up and said, you know what, you guys, you live a little closer to that rink. You go play there. We'll play over here. And now we'll have more competition against each other. Right. So we actually broke up our own team from the kids' perspective to go and do that. It was pretty bad.
That's crazy.
How often would that happen now?
No, probably not. We did play. It was a little different structure back there because everyone played on their local club team. And then the certain kids would play. We'd get a practice every so often and a game every so often for the AAA team, which was made up of sort of everybody in the area. But everyone played on their local team. And so to be more competitive, we ended up doing that. So a little different. And a lot of those ended up going on and playing it at a pretty good level.
Cool. So how did you get all the way from Southern California to Lake Superior State?
USHL first.
Yeah.
I had been, so USA Hockey had these national player development camps, which you guys are probably familiar with, or at least today's version. I was involved in the very first two of those. And the state of California, based on its population size, got to send two players. So myself and, you know, nobody else, California, were selected to go. We went, was seen by whoever, and got invited to come and try out for a junior team in the U.S. at that particular time. And so I played through midgets, which at that time was 16 and 16U. There was no 18U midget hockey at the time. After that, it was juvenile and some other classifications. But so I went to the USHL my senior in high school, did that. You know, because there wasn't any junior hockey even in California. Youth hockey kind of ended at 16. So it wasn't even a place to really play locally. Yeah. Then went, got my scholarship, late, went to Lake State. Lucky to be there. And actually a couple other Californians were on my college team at Lake State at the time too. So,
oh, wow, that's cool. That.
Yeah, a kid that I grew up, you're familiar with the name Mike DeCarl at all?
No.
So Mike and I basically from about, 9-10 years of age on, played together basically all the way through college. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. So when you finished your time at Lake Superior, was it always in the back of your mind to kind of step right into the coaching?
Yeah, I think so. I had had an opportunity at the time to work some summer hockey schools and some other things, and I liked that. And maybe just the coaches that I was around, you know, they were pretty inspiring. My junior coach was Frank Serratori, who's the current head coach at Air Force.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was around some good people that were good at coaching, and really probably inspired me to stay with it. But so I kind of knew. And then how I got into it, it was a crazy story too, because I was senior at Lake Superior State. My coach at the time had said, hey, look, there's a graduate program at Miami of Ohio that they said you could probably get into if you'd be interested. It's a developed to be a coach in the grad degree. Like, oh, that's really cool. We played St. Cloud State in the NCAA tournament, and we had eliminated them in the tournament, and we're going through the handshake line, and the assistant coach was someone that I had worked hockey school for. Knew I was a good kid, knew I worked hard, and in the handshake line, he's like, hey, you're graduating, what are you doing next year? And I'm saying, well, I'm going to probably get into coaching and go do a graduate program. He's like, well, don't go there, we need somebody. Literally in the handshake line, yeah, they're like, yep, we got a spot for you.
That's crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And before we get started, you know, California, theoretically, even now in conversations, I think so many people are surprised on the growth that we've had in the sport and just, you know, the kids that are coming out. Obviously, when you're mm-hmm. saying only two people were added and it was very small spectrum, what do you think the challenges kids face coming from California now versus maybe when you had to make that journey or embark on that journey?
I think the perception may still be with the families and kids locally that, you know, hockey's unknown and, you know, people outside of California don't know we can play. I can guarantee that everybody at the elite, at the high performance level, the NHL, Division I college hockey, major, junior, like across the board, everybody at those levels not only knows that there are good players in California, but they expect that there to be players when they come watch all the time. So the expectation from that level has changed. You don't have to, if you're from California, you don't have to like show up on some, you know, tryout or whatever, and people go, ah, you're from California, so we're going to put a line through you. Like, they're going to go, oh, probably pretty good player. Right. So the idea that you have to chase it as hard as some people think they need to chase it is not the reality of what the hockey world now perceives.
Awesome. It's good to hear.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's always nice.
Yeah, so you kind of embark on that coaching journey, and it was 2002, you won that gold medal. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, was that the first gold medal for U.S. at IIF level?
You hear Dave's voice coming from the Canadian. He said that kind of slowly.
No, you know, so as a hockey nation, we keep evolving and keep getting better. And, you know, from a coaching standpoint, you know, it's always good to get off the bus with the best players, right? And yeah. I can tell you that particular group was really special, some wonderful players. But the best thing I can tell you about that group was our best players were our best people. You know, it sounds cliche, but they were our hardest working, best people, best teammates. That group was like, you know, Ryan Suter, Zach Parise, Ryan Kessler, who play for the Ducks. A ton of players obviously went on to play at a really, really high level, have great careers, but they were really good human beings and cared about each other. And like, it's no secret why that group was probably the first to break through for us. And then, you know, lucky us as coaches to be around that group. And then a couple of years later, get the opportunity with the same group to win the first under 20 world junior championship for the U.S. So
nice.
But it's the players.
Yeah. So you've been around a lot of different places in the coaching aspect. Is there one part of the coaching kind of carousel that you've been on that kind of is lodged more in your memory than others?
You know, there's always individual players. You know, look, teams, when you win a world championship or an NCAA championship or any of those things, like, yeah, that
pretty memorable.
Yeah, those are kind of hard to not feel like. But I think it's more the individuals and the relationships. Like, I've gotten as much satisfaction sometimes as being around 12-year-olds as it is with the big kids too, right? The NHL guys, because it's what we do as coaches. We're there to help people and we're there to help them improve. Had a lot of different stops, but you know, it's always comes back to the relationships that you have.
Yeah, that's true. So on a, I guess to kind of switch topics here, I know one of the main topics we talked about discussing with you was the ADM, implementation of ADM with USA Hockey across, you know, the country at different clubs. And I know with us, us managers, we, you know, that's the, what we use on a daily basis when we're dealing with our youth. Where did that all originate from in terms of the ADM?
Yeah. Well, it started sort of about 10, 12 years ago now. In, you know, a couple of things. We had started our national team development program and we had taken a bunch of pro and college coaches. And I can say I was in the mix. I had that background of working there. And we'd made, you know, some mistakes as we evolved. You know, when your pro coaches or NHL coaches dealing with those older athletes, and then you come back and start to deal with a younger age group, you know, the same things that are important maturity-wise and training-wise and everything else may not be the same thing, right? And we, you know, kind of learned and evolved, and we said, okay, well, we've learned some lessons here, and you know, we really want to be better. So there are three things that were going on at that particular time. One, we were seeing a drop in enrollment in numbers of kids participating in our sport. We were seeing this, our retention wasn't as good as it could have been. So that's one alarming thing. And our world rankings and all that, you know, how we competed on a world stage probably wasn't as consistent as we would have liked with the level of and the number of players that we had. So from a performance side of things, we were seeing some things. So it just really caused USA Hockey to kind of take a step back and go, you know, maybe we should look in the mirror here, right, and do some self-evaluation. So that's where it started. And it just, we got a group of people together and we said, okay, let's look at our sport top to bottom, what's going on. And what we found was, is based on the best possible evidence that was out there in sport, in development, in kids, in pedagogy with teaching, and in all these things that we could draw from, we just figured out that we probably could be a little bit better here. So that's where it started, and it continually evolves. I mean, there I can tell you there's some things that we have evolved in our own thinking as we gain more experience, and then there's new research coming on all the time as we progress in learning how to just be a little bit better at sport development. So it's a journey, but a lot of fun.
Geez, with that answer, you knocked out a lot of our questions right off the bat. Now we're going to have to start fishing for some other stuff.
Drill into any one of those. That's
So I guess when you talked about when you started it and looking at, you know, different stats across, you know, the board of the drop off, the retention and whatnot, were there any other things you can talk about different, maybe different sports or different countries that you guys looked at and evaluate it?
For sure. I mean, you know, we have a connection with, at least at the federation level, with all of the other hockey playing federations. So Canada with, you know, the Finns, the Swedes, the Czechs, not so much the Russians, but, you know, just some of our staff, like the Lou Vero, has a great relationship with them, but, you know, some of their social structures are a little different. So you're looking at how things can translate. I mean, we did look, but you know, when you're looking at that's important. And then other sports as well. There's some really smart people that are doing some great things in a lot of other sports outside of ice hockey that, you know, the technical and tactical things in our sports are different, but how kids learn, how they learn motor skills, how they grow and develop, like, oh, it's the same because they're kids, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of lessons that we can learn. we took a lot from, you know, volleyball was influential, soccer around the world. If you look at global soccer and the amount of money and resources that's put into soccer development at, you know, the development academies in Spain and England and others, like, they think long and about what it is that they're doing, you know? So we were able to learn from a lot of them, interact from them, and pull information then in from your education, from people that are teachers, people that are, you know, physical education, all these different things. So it may look sometimes that there's not a lot of thought that goes into it, but there's a lot of thought that goes into it, right? So, and we're trying to always learn and be better.
Now that, you know, ADM has kind of been implemented for a little while and you have all these different, you know, perspectives on different federations, stuff like that, is there any kind of stats or any kind of, you know, information that's come out to show the value and, you know, the success of this format that you guys have created?
Well, we can tell you that we stopped the bleeding, so to speak, on numbers of kids leaving our sport, getting more kids. Like we have 30,000 in a typical year. Now we have over 30,000 more kids entering our sport playing than we did, you know, when we first started this. And we can see from adopters and non-adopters by club through registration, those like who is actually doing a good job in retaining players. So the clubs that are involved and are following along tend to be the ones that grow and retain players, because we can also look at our statistics and we can tell you where some clubs, they look successful on the outside, but all they've done is just run around sometimes and, you know, pick a player off from this club, that club, yeah, steal everybody else's, versus like a club like yours, where we see you guys as you do an unbelievable job at getting kids into the game and
grow. Yeah, we had to build a great park.
Well, exactly. Right. And then, you know, some kids may wander away from your club, but yeah, at the end of the day, certain clubs are builders, right? You guys have historically been a good builder, you know?
Awesome.
So correct me if I'm wrong, the ADM, like, it wasn't originally constructed or developed for any specific age or skill level, because I know for me, like, we'll use ADM and implement a lot of ADM stuff with our grassroots, and then I'm coaching, yeah, Junior Ducks, and I implement a lot of it with our travel as well. So I was always curious about.
Yeah, so keep in mind that this started with some of the lessons and the things we learned national team program.
Yeah.
Like, it's like say the Ford Motor Company having a race division and trying to make the car go faster, and then all of a sudden you figure out, you know what, we can bring this back into sort of the mass production model, you know, like,
yeah,
like spread that information back out over, you know, throughout our country. So, and a lot of the things that we're doing even at the younger age groups are stuff that still get woven into different aspects of what we're doing with, you know, the older players. So this is a cradle to grave kind of model. It's really, we look at it as high performance development. What is the best development structure and things that we can do at each age stage along the pathway? And there's a lot of overlap. Now, there's something different at each age simply because, you know, the needs of an 18-year-old are not the same as the needs of an 8-year-old. Right? But there's still things that are in common.
You know, one of the reasons why we do this podcast is obviously parent education, right? You know, getting the information out to parents on a different capacity. One of the big questions is hockey out here is 365, right? It doesn't seem like we have a break. Mm-hmm. Is there a thing as too much? You know, we have kids out here on the ice 7 days a week. I mean, they're grinding, which is, you know, yeah, good to some quality, but, you know, the ultimate question, is there too much?
Yeah, and the research is actually really clear on that there is. Don't get me wrong, our sport ramps up like everybody else, but it's just not at the ages that people think. Pre-puberty, like, be careful what you think and what's actually happening there. And I'm not supposed to publicly talk about, but the NHL has done a research study on membership. So the 700 plus athletes in the league, and they did this last year, 2019. Okay. 98%, over 98, almost over 98.5% of the players that played in the league were multi-sport athletes till a minimum of 14.
Wow.
And a significant number after that. So when you think, and there's all these examples, like everyone wants to look at like the one-off that specialized and made it through, but those that are specializing, it is the landscape of dead bodies, because all these ones that no one ever talks about that just fade away. Everyone thinks, well, it's my kid. My kid's the one that's going to survive. And the odds are, like, we've done different areas of research where we'll look at people that are really like trying to specialize at 9 and 10, and how many of them are left at 15, 16. And at 15, 16, 17 years of age, 80% of the ones that are there were not the ones that specialized early.
They're done with hockey.
They're done with hockey.
Yeah.
And even like, these are the things that we looked at when with our national team program, like even some kids that were really good at 15, 16, they tend to be the early physical matures a lot of times. Okay. Not that that's bad or that they can't continue to be good, but we just do different things. We change the focus. Now all of a sudden, instead of development, it's changed to, you know, more to, you know, compete to win and, you know, that type of focus, and we're going to shortcut some. So we might stagnate some things, or we're overdoing it. And what we were seeing was a lot of our better kids that had ability at those age groups, there was no more emotional energy left in the tank. When it becomes time to actually ramp it up, they were done. They could not, they just, and we know that to be really good, you have to have the emotional energy and focus to be able to do that. And those kids that, and look again at the NHL level, it's the vast majority of them that did other things that were a little bit more well-rounded, so that when they did start to really specialize and ramp it up, and this is my sport, they're ready to go.
Would you agree that, you know, with kids, it clicks at different times as well? You know, you talk about different age groups. You know, some kid might have had a 10-year-old, and not on the playing perspective, but just kind of gets things and just has that drive. And then someone might be at 10, might not. And then 15, 16, boom. It's just like, where did that kid come from?
I mean, everybody's on their own journey, on their own path, right? I mean, you can't compare kids to kids. You know, like some kids – physically, they've grown a little faster, so they have some of those advantages. Sometimes cognitively, kids have developed a little quicker than others. Right? But it all doesn't shake out in the wash until, you know, late teens. I mean, even if you look at the National Hockey League, typically 16, 17% of the league is undrafted. Okay, that means that if you look at the 12 players that are on the ice at any one time, two of them were undrafted. And the NHL spends as much money as anybody on player procurement trying to find the right players. And they do a good job at being able to analyze where everybody's at 18 and 19, but yet players still continue to develop, evolve. And right? So it's a human, the only thing we know about human development is it's messy.
We can see that now.
Right, and it's non-linear. I mean, it comes back to how we deal with things as coaches. You know, we'll have kids that they're good one year and then they'll get a little dip. Something's going on, you know, or they grew a little bit or they're off or this or something's going on. It's really, really difficult. Like being an age group youth coach, we'll say this a lot to people. It may be even a more difficult job than the pro coach coaching the Ducks or the Kings or, you know, the Sharks or somebody else, right? Because they're dealing with fully formed adults. Hey, you guys that work in the youth space, every time you think you figured out a kid, they keep changing. they grow, develop, and like it's constant. So, you know, that's hard. It's a really tough job.
I got a question for you, Ken. Pertains to, I know I'm 50 and I grew up in San Diego. You grew up in Norwalk. When we were younger, it was major junior or junior A in NHL. Do you see the trend of more college kids now? Because now college hockey is huge. There's way more teams when we were younger. So do you see the trend that more kids are making to the NHL out of college hockey than ever before?
Oh, yeah. Like, well, over a third of the league right now is college hockey graduates. Right. So, you know, like if you're a good player, like it really doesn't – like college hockey's got – it actually from an athlete development standpoint is actually probably the best – model going in terms of practice to game, being able to train physically and those things versus the compete schedule. And then looking at things in terms by position and some others, there's some things that you don't have to be necessarily ready to sign your pro contract quite as early. Right? We know that you continue to develop over time. So there's some good things, and I'm not knocking major junior at all. Like there's really good coaches there. There's really good people. But if you look at from a structural standpoint on some of those things, like even NHL teams are figuring it out. Look what's happened, for example, with the American Hockey League in the West now, right? Typically you would come along and an NHL team would say, I've got this young player that's in my system, right? And we need him to get bigger and stronger. Like that's one of the things that they're young, they haven't, right? We need him to get bigger and stronger. So we're going to play an 80-something game schedule and never allow him to train because of all the travel. And like, how do they get bigger and stronger?
Right.
That doesn't match up with what the needs are. So they've actually, in American League out west, like they've tried to cut down travel, less games, some of these things, so that they can maybe schedule and build more from a development side of things in there, right? So that's what college hockey it does really well, and a lot of those universities have some of the best facilities on the planet.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt.
No, they have the sports med, they have the resources. Like it's
all the investment in the sports science and nutrition that they do at a college level is just it's off the charts. Right. Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I guess
people everywhere.
Yeah, and I think you were right when you say like there's not one path for, it's not just one path for everybody. There's 1,000 different paths to get to the same result. You got to find out which one is best for you as an individual and your development and where you are. I think that's, and sometimes I think with California, sometimes our kids, it's the unknown. They don't know. And it's,
yeah, it's lack of exposure. That. Yeah. And how good college hockey really is. Like, again, it's the kids are a little older, a little bigger, stronger, you know, like there's some interesting, it's a good level of play, you know?
Yeah. I mean, one of the conversations you might, you know, with the kids is embracing the journey, right? You know, obviously there's a bunch of different paths and a bunch of different avenues, but you have to be willing to, you know, embark on that. And you know, it might take you in a bunch of different turns, but you know, as long as your head's in the right place and you have good people around you, you know, you enjoy the path, right? You enjoy the journey.
Yes, yes.
Question for you, Ken, about back to that ADM real quick. When you guys, at the initial implementation of it, was there ever any maybe pushback or maybe lack of understanding across certain organizations? Like how much kind of resources and education did you guys have to put in to really get everybody to understand?
We're still in education mode. Like, you know, it's tough, like coaches from a coaching standpoint. You know, when you get done playing and you say, you know, someone asks you to go coach, well, what do you remember? Well, I remember what I did, right? So, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to rely on that. So getting people to think a little differently is not always easy because change is what we're looking at, right? And change isn't easy for a lot of people. You know, it's what I'm comfortable with, what I know. So there's always that educational process that has to happen, and then we've constantly have new families, new people entering the sport, right? It's, I always kind of relate it back to my time being a college coach, where, you know, recruiting athletes, right? It may be your 1,000th time as the coach going through the process of recruiting somebody, so it's old hat to you, but it's always their first time.
Yeah.
So you can't assume that they have the information. So it's up to us to try and connect and get information out onto why we're doing what it is that we're doing. So.
Right on.
Yeah. Hey, Kent, go as well. Parents are always asking, sometimes everyone with for information in regards to playing up, maybe to get their kid more exposure just because they think that their kids, maybe the next Gretzky, I don't know. Right.
Like, that's the hot topic.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that?
Oh yeah. Well, a lot here. Cause it's exposure versus being exposed.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Like when you move up and you don't perform, or you're average, like that's at the older levels, that's part of the problem is running around chasing too many things. I'm going to go to this exposure event, versus am I investing in myself to be better? Because if you go and you're not very good, like you get exposed and people go, there's an issue there. But the playing up thing, what we find is that, then there's a lot of comments, but you want to get there at the right time, right? And a lot goes into develop beyond just what we see as a physically from a player. It's mentally, socially, cognitive, all that wrapped into it. A lot of times, I rarely see it. It doesn't hurt anybody staying at their normal level for the in your birth year, so to speak. That is never, go out and dominate. If you can score 5 goals in a game, score 5. If you can, and then that comes back to the coach to say, okay, let's challenge you some other ways. But, those things don't hold kids back. What holds kids back, we see, is when they bump up a level and maybe they had some special attributes and now all of a sudden they have to change the way they play to survive, right? Which, now they're not developing those special attributes. Yeah.
And if they're getting frustrated, then our confidence is going to go down too, right? Completely. So
yes. So all of that ties into it. And you find that the ones that push it, it doesn't work out as well as staying in your own. Now look, there's always somebody, right? But for the most part, like even an Austin Matthews was staying in his birth year pretty much growing up all day long. Pat Kane wasn't jumping up birth years to play. Like the special, what makes a player special? We want to actually enhance that. We want them to continue to focus on that, not all of a sudden detract away. So we can do other things that challenge them within their birth year. But don't think that it's too easy or too – there's too many, like, development's really complex.
Yeah.
It just is. So,
I think you've hit a lot of, everything right on the head. I mean, obviously we can see, what you're talking about,
we dig into this with research too. Like this is facts. Like if we're going to push something out from USA Hockey's level, then we're going to make sure that it's been well researched. It's not my opinion here.
Yeah, like, absolutely. Yeah,
no, exactly.
Like I said, the NHL, their internal study that we got access to, like 98.5,
96%.
Facts.
Yeah, and I know USA Hockey has done a great job in the past, 6-7 years of getting all, like, parent education, right? They're trying to inform people and let people know. And, we've all noticed that too, which is huge.
I don't know if we've done a great job. I don't know if we've done a great job. I think we're working at it. We could be better. Getting information from 60,000 feet back down to ice level is really, really difficult. And that's our biggest challenge, is how do we communicate with everybody and, give parents the right information. We always say an informed parent is an ally.
Yeah.
The more information we can give them to make their own decisions, but give them the accurate information, not opinion, and I'm not selling this to, from our end, we just want kids to be good and enjoy the sport and be better. And right, this is not something that I'm trying to make a buck off of a film, yeah. Right? Like, I'm trying to give them the right information so that they can navigate.
You know, what's really cool about what you just said is it kind of ties into exactly what the four of us kind of deal with on a daily basis with our, you know, grassroots parents. You know, we'll get emails or we'll talk to parents on a daily basis about, you know, talking about the practices or the clinics-based, you know, and if we use station-based, you know, maybe mm-hmm. parents that are not familiar with it question why are they not doing, you know, team, mm-hmm. more team-oriented, you know, play. Mm-hmm. So, and I think what you just said kind of helps us, you know, doing this podcast, being able to send this out to customers is that the decisions that we're making are not ours. We're making decisions based on people that have made decisions based on information about behind stats, and we are implementing that stuff. So I think that, like you, what you just said, you know, truly rings truthfully with what we kind of deal with right now.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, you guys as an organization do a really good job. So.
Well, Ken, we're at that 35-minute mark. I want to say thank you for taking a little bit of time to kind of give our customers some information and allow us to ask you a few questions that I know our customers will be happy to get input from you and USA Hockey on. I'll leave you with this one thing. Last week, we had Craig Johnson on here, and we ended the segment with a question. We had him pick his foursome to go one round of golf. Of players dead or alive, he picked Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky, and he picked his dad. So I'm going to leave you do a lot of work in the kind of the teaching aspect of developing programs and working mm-hmm. with different coaches across different countries and whatnot. You get your perfect foursome built on coaches, you know, dead or alive. Who would it be?
Wow.
Any sport.
Oh my God.
You had a lot to say. Tough. Now we're stumped them.
Yeah. Well, you know,
you better say Herb Brooks if you work at USA Hockey.
no, that's not necessarily true. I think I would tend to, you know, there's some coaches that I would love to spend more time with that do a really good job, maybe from the grassroots level, you know. To be honest, maybe a Tarasov, an Anatoly Tarasov, somebody like that who kind of helped develop Russian hockey, but looked at the sport so differently. I think that would be one that in ice hockey would be unbelievable. You know, who else would be? My God, there's too many people on the list, you know?
You only got three more, or two more.
I only have three more. Well, wait a second. I'm one of the people in the foursome, right?
So yes. Yeah, two.
Two more. So I would have to say Tarasov for one. I would have to actually say that there's a researcher that is doing some good things in – this guy, Dr. Keith Davids, who's doing some really good research on ecological dynamics and how kids and as athletes and how we relate to our environment, the environment we create. I'd love to probably spend some more time. That's going to be props to the, because I know there's some of our staff that would probably like to spend time with him as well. And then lastly, you know, let's invite Pat Kane to go golfing, because as a creative, intelligent hockey player that doesn't have maybe the same attributes as everybody else, not the biggest, not the fastest. I mean, they're faster players, but you know, the things that he sees and picks up in the game, and like there's some special stuff. So as an American player right now in the league, it probably as good as we have from a creativity side of things.
We'll accept awesome. That.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Well, Ken, I just want to say thank you again. I know, speak for all of us coaches, that we appreciate everything that USA Hockey is doing to continually implant more education for us coaches. And You know, we never feel like we're kind of stuck on an island by ourselves as coaches in terms of our growth and learning. There's always stuff that you guys come out with that is very helpful. And I know you've done a lot in bringing coaches in to different practices that we've had. And I know you've had them attend some of my practices over the years, and I've learned a lot and got a lot of great feedback that has helped me personally as coach. So just want to say thank you for that. Thank you for the time that you've given us today. And just ask that you stay safe during this time, and hopefully we can get back on the ice sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I hope this, you know, we get back to some semblance of normal eventually, and I get a chance to come back out and visit you guys.
Thank you so much.
That sounds good.
Perfect.
Yeah, thanks, Ken.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And to our viewers, our customers, thanks for tuning in. We look forward to seeing everybody next week. We have a special episode next week. We'll have our adult coordinators coming on to talk about adult hockey across California board here. So tune in for that. Till then, stay safe.
See you guys.